listening to Trending with Timory, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timory holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
It is good to be with you, full of joy this week as we are in the third week of Advent, right after Gaudete Sunday, meaning joy. And so as we're traveling through Advent, we're reminded with the purple and now even the pink or rose, as Father calls it, that we are meant to be continuing to anticipate our Lord with prayer and fasting, almsgiving. With me this week is Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy, which you can find his work, especially their published work from podcasts, CDs, small booklets, longer books at mensacademypress.com. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here as always, Timory.
Thank you. Now, what's new in the world of the Men's Academy? Tell us a little bit about your mission for those who are not used to the Men's Academy.
Basically, I founded the Men's Academy in light of a current need in the church, that is to propagate an authentic understanding of manliness and to help men best adapt that authentic understanding with manliness in the spiritual life. And so I find that one of the reasons why men are failing in the spiritual life, or they're finding themselves in a number of difficulties and in relationships and other areas of their life, is because they're not well-founded and grounded in authentic masculinity that really speaks to their hearts, that resonates with them, and one which they're really able to exercise.
I really enjoy having your perspective on the show. Today we're going to be talking, I guess in some ways you could throw the theme out there of, are we being morally, let's say, politically correct in some areas? And one of the questions all throughout there is, so we're pro-life, but are we kind of quiet about it? Are we doing anything about it in our lives? Not that you have to completely leave everything and become a pro-life missionary, but that's one issue. I think my mom actually put it to me recently. She said, while young people are more pro-life now, she said, they're not anti-abortion. And there's a big difference between saying, yes, I'm pro-life. I believe, you know, the baby's a baby in the womb, et cetera. And I wouldn't want an abortion. But again, I'm personally opposed, but I wouldn't really do anything about it.
Sure. And I think that in great measure, Timory falls from a skeptical age, which says there's really no absolute truth. So I shouldn't impose this absolute truth on others. I may believe it, my faith says so, but I just can't impose that on others.
We're going to come up to this more because it's a really important conversation. And we have this skepticism and we have this lack of moral clarity. Are we just falling into that middle mush where we don't stand for anything, yet we pretend that we kind of do? We'll also be talking a lot about what's happening at the Supreme Court. We'll be talking about an upcoming movie in the new year about a abortion clinic worker who is in fact Employee of the Year for quite some time with Planned Parenthood. More on that. The Pope, we don't often talk about the Pope because he is somewhat controversial and there's been some ambiguity over the last couple years in some of the tough moral issues, which we are being very, very faithful to the Magisterium and the Catechism on. So it was really refreshing, I think, for some people to hear some of his comments that were published and approved, which sometimes there's something said by the Pope anymore and there's not clarification from the Vatican about whether or not he said it.
Exactly, yeah.
And so that's why Dr. Philip Chavez and I are going to get into that a little bit more. We'll also be talking about, why are the Boy Scouts considering going bankrupt? And how can you really use the last little bit of Advent this year for true spiritual transformation and sacrifice? So I want to start, Dr. Chavez, I'm excited to hear more of your thoughts on this pro-life versus not anti-abortion later on, but I want to start with the Supreme Court really declining a case that was coming out of Kansas and Louisiana on where Medicaid funding was or wasn't going for different organizations.
Right. I guess one of the fundamental difficulties is that regardless of where the individual justices stand, they really should have dealt with this because ultimately their duty is to resolve disputes between states. And so they really, it's incumbent upon them. In fact, that's who they are. That's why they were put together, to resolve these. And so they've in some way been derelict and not treating that and addressing that.
They've kind of bunted the issue back to the other courts. Now, it's interesting because Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has really called out the other judges, especially two of the judges that voted, including the controversial Kavanaugh, to not hear the case. Now, what this case has to do essentially is what's really neat is that this whole case is influenced by David DeLayden's undercover work exposing the selling and buying of fetal remains of aborted babies.
Exactly.
And we're going to talk more about what's going on with these fetal remains, with the baby's body parts. I use fetus sometimes. I've got to be really clear because fetus is a Latin word for infant or young
right.
one. It's a medical term. And so I'm not degrading the human person sometimes when I use that word interchangeably.
Sure.
And so we have to remember that. And, you know, when we're talking to people who are, say, not pro-life and we're talking about abortion and the baby, be really clear. You may use fetus when you're talking to them a little bit, but you need to actually reemphasize baby because for some reason, modern culture has used fetus to disassociate with the child.
That's right. Or to take the personhood out of the child somehow.
Absolutely. So why we're mentioning David DeLayden's work is that when he exposed essentially the selling and buying of fetal remains and that this is actually illegal in our country and has been for a very long time.
That's right.
What happened is that different states basically started to say, okay, Planned Parenthood or other pro-abortion medical providers, if you have anything to do with this, we're actually no longer going to partner with you for Medicaid funding.
That's right.
And so what's happened in Kansas and Louisiana is that we're seeing different individuals suing, maybe they're in favor or not in favor of fetal remains, their states over who is and isn't getting access to Medicaid funding. And so
That's basically right.
The question is, can individuals bring lawsuits against a state's decision on who receives Medicaid funding?
That's right. And so that has to be resolved as whether they do have that ability or not, or can do that or not. But again, that in some way resounds, do the states have the right to suppress the use of Medicaid funds for Planned Parenthood, who's shown themselves to be more than delinquent, actually exercising criminal activity in the sales of body parts.
Absolutely. And this is really interesting because two of the justices who tend to lean on the more conservative side basically said, no, we're not going to hear this right now. And some people are saying, well, is it because the court needs to be more neutral? So they're taking a stance. Is it because Kavanaugh's had too much controversy and maybe in his first year they shouldn't touch abortion? I don't really see them choosing not to hear that issue over this. Basically, when they bunted it away from them, what we're seeing is that this is coming up in other cases in the lower courts. And so it's going to be back at the Supreme Court before we know it.
That's right. And maybe their strategy was to wait this one out and not to give such a, how would I say, a conservative impression right at the beginning. You know, this is a difficult thing to weigh because ultimately, you know, for any justice, he wants to bring about the common good. And I don't know if they can really, they should be aiming toward that. So I really don't know what's in their hearts or in their strategy, but ostensibly they have been derelict in their decision to not take this case.
There's much more going on in the world of pro-life issues right now as we wrap up the year and we head into Roe v. Wade month. We're going to hear a lot more stories that are coming to fruition where people are wanting to share their testimony among other things. But I was just reading about something in Detroit that was very, very disturbing. In fact, the police chief in Detroit has commented on how disturbing this is and that he's never dealt with a case like this. And this is it. Babies preterm, so before they would be delivered at that full 40 weeks, these babies basically 450 baby parts have been found. Most of the baby body parts date back to the last 3 years or so. A couple went back into the early 90s from what I saw. But these babies, dead babies, were found at two different cemeteries. Tons of them. I mean, we're talking hundreds of small babies.
Yeah.
Now, it seems like most of them were coming from miscarriages,
yes.
And these babies were left at the hospital.
That's right. Not accounted for by their parents. Yeah.
Yes. Now, some of them, we also find out that there in Michigan, 15 aborted babies were found in an abortionist car trunk, and pro-lifers really fought to have these babies buried. This poses a real issue, Dr. Chavez.
It does.
Where we no longer have this attitude and respect to bury the dead because we don't respect human life in its early stages if it's not wanted.
Exactly. And yes, that would naturally follow. Certainly if you disrespect life so much as allowing one to live. You're certainly not going to respect them when they're dead and they're in some way their natural rights they have to a proper burial and interment. So yes, that insensitivity to life or that disregard for life is going to lead to, oh, just warehousing babies and just leaving them or discarding them or improperly treating them. And again, all human beings deserve a proper burial or a proper interment at the end of their lives.
Right. Now, while Gethsemane Cemetery and Knollwood, which are associated with each other, did bury or properly bury these children, some of which were found in a crypt at one of the cemeteries, there were also a good handful of them, around 50, that were not properly cared for in their burial. And I just look back at it, man, one of our corporal works of mercy, right?
That's
corporal
right,
works
to bury
of mercy.
The dead. Yes.
Is to bury the dead.
Yes.
And, you know, I think of war even and how there's a respect for the enemy that at least they're, even if we disagree with them, we have that respect for life, that we allow people to bury their dead, to bury their family members.
Yes, to take them off the field. Yeah, again, as you point out, Timmy, and you're exactly right. I mean, there's this universal respect that should always be shown, even in time of war, even in time of great conflict. And again, it shows, that is a science very well put, that even in times of war, even in times of great conflict, that even opposing sides have such a reverence for life, they will allow each other to properly take back and bury their dead.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, the attitude should be, my desire is not death and destruction. My desire is to overcome this difficulty that is causing in some way spiritual, moral, psychological death in my people, right?
That's
and
right.
So we're trying to still show that reverence, that we're trying to get back to what is good and true in society. And that's the purpose of war, is to bring back that ability to worship. That's Dr.
That's right.
Philip Chavez. I'm Timmy Millington. Coming up, we're going to be discussing, why have we become apathetic to abortion? We may be more pro-life than prior generations, but are we to the point where we would speak up against abortion? Maybe even be pro-life activists? Coming up.
Timmy will be right back. Tweet them at Timmy. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmy, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
We're getting ready to go into a couple weeks of extra days off, maybe more time on the road, and more time with friends and family. So be sure to turn your phone into a mobile radio and listen to episodes of Trending. You can find us at radiotrending.com. Maybe catch those episodes you've never heard if you're listening on the airways. Your network may only carry one of our radio shows, whether you're in the Midwest or on coast to coast, wherever you might be. We air across the country, but we do have two shows each week. So find those at radiotrending.com, where you can also find out more about my guest today, Dr. Philip Chavez. He's a founder of the Men's Academy, and I love getting his perspective because he especially brings to the forefront the impact of men on the family today and how men need to be called to more.
That's right.
And so one area I would love to hear your thoughts. I mentioned this at the beginning of the show. As we just talked about the fetal body parts, the baby body parts, right, that were found 450 in Detroit, another 15 in an abortionist's car. I think that these are stories we need to bring up to people today.
I think there are. And because for this reason, to be sensitive to life and to be pro-life, when we cover the variety of issues here, we may say that, well, yes, abortion may be the worst, but the fruits and what's happening as a result of our disrespect for life happen with our disrespect for the interment of little babies. So this is not a small issue in the sense of what it points back to. That's the universal respect for all human life. And it's strange in some way for some who find that unintelligible, they may find it even more unintelligible to see that even a dead person has rights to a proper burial and a proper interment.
Right.
So I think it's vital that we do deal with these issues because they do point us back to a lack of reverence for life generally.
Yeah. And I think that it convicts us if we're not sure what we think about the dignity, right, the worth mm-hmm. of that preborn child. Yet we have clarity when it's a newborn baby, right?
Right.
Or the inconsistencies. I mean, even actually we're seeing right now, I mentioned last week that Ireland is after they worked through this amendment to their constitution there in Ireland, they're basically working now to make abortion accessible so quickly that their goal is to have it widespread access access as of January 1st. Now, they'll become one of the first countries, actually, to have abortion so accessible. They're trying to make it so that any area, any normal private practice can perform abortions. Yet the doctors are saying, are we actually ready for this? Now, this is what's interesting. The same doctors who would be delivering babies, they want to have access to abortion in those same exact facilities. Do we not see the controversy here? You know, we fight to save a baby that's born prematurely at 27, 28, 30 sure. weeks, yet we're aborting these same children.
Yeah. Well, in this case, in Ireland, I would imagine, too, within the kind of skeptical cultures I mentioned earlier, with there being no real absolute truth and no ultimate really right or wrong, that there's a kind of a sense that, well, we should just have a freedom to choose whatever we wish, whether it is to conserve life and respect it or to abort life and disregard it. And so in this light, I would imagine that, again, this is a degeneration of the culture, degeneration really of the mind that's able to see the inconsistency. But then again, a degeneration which believes, well, if there's no real absolute truth, all should be given the ability and the right to believe what they want and to exercise what they wish from those beliefs.
See, and even those of us who claim to be pro-life would not want to impose that on anyone else. Well, I'm pro-life, but, or I'm always surprised by the number of people I hear, well, I'm pro-life, I would never have an abortion, but when my friend asked me to go to the abortion clinic with her, I didn't know who else would support her, so I went. Or I was willing to right. go, and then I was so happy when she changed her mind. Well, maybe you shouldn't have been willing to go in the first place. You would take such a hard stand in being that person's friend.
That's right. And I think, too, what's happening here, it may not just be a lack of a certain conviction about how gravely wrong it is for abortion. But I think in these cases, as you just mentioned, really, it's a lack of fortitude. It's lack mm-hmm. of ability to stand up. And so this is what's happening. I think as the culture gets more and more, we'll just say, challenged and compromised, the ability to people to seek and really to exercise justice will be lacking. Mm-hmm. And so what I think what you're finding is, in these cases, there's such a lack of courage there. They find themselves consenting and even aiding and abetting this kind of evil activity.
Which is a mortal sin.
It is.
It is a mortal sin. If you at any point in your life have participated, or maybe someone was asking your thoughts on abortion, they were considering one, and you were silent, that was a sin of omission.
That's right.
If you did not speak up, if you did not take action, or if you went with them, again, either a sin of omission or a sin of participating actively in someone else's destruction of human life.
That's right. And it, in all cases, it's what we call a grave matter. It may differ in light of the intensity, or rather the gravity, but it's still grave matter. So yes, to be passive, to not do something, or to in some way cooperate, which may seem like not really doing much of anything, really is doing something quite grave.
That's Dr. Philip Chavez. I'm Timory Millington. You are listening to Trending. You know, this generation, my generation, has grown up with abortion always being legal. We have not known anything else. Abortion's right. been legal through all 9 months of a woman's pregnancy. So while we can refer to maybe improper thinking, in many ways, we view often what is legal as what is moral. And right. so while our church may compel us to be pro-life, if someone's never really received a pro-life education on what abortion actually is, they may just go through the motions of saying they're pro-life. Maybe they even go to the March for Life or Walk for Life on either of the coasts, but don't really do anything outside of that. And I have to say, Dr. Chavez, I think my story, even growing up in a pro-life home, unless I'd really, really seen what abortion was, I think it could have taken me much longer to fully come to this anti-abortion activist stance.
Sure. And I think really, Timory, there's so many factors that fall in here. I think people are so distracted today from even thinking about these things or seeing the gravity or coming really to the realization of what it is to be pro-life. And again, to even define that is such a wide, wide issue. I would say this in light of, I think really in some way, if we were to encapsulate a pro-life message, it would really be a message about the family. Mm-hmm. So if we don't really see families as a man and woman coming together for the, in some way, a primary end to beget and to raise children, to respect and honor that and safeguard that, if that's not present, we're going to fail to also see and regard the fruit of that, which is unborn, which is life itself.
And so, go ahead.
And so what I think what's happening in this culture and the difficulty of coming to terms with what it is to respect life, to be pro-life, is because of failure to see, really, to have respect to see the reverence, the dignity for the family, and what really the ends of the family are about.
Now, speaking of family, would you possibly think that the lack of children we see in society today, the lack of children also has a huge impact on the lack of active pro-life attitude? I know so many people who they've never even held a child. I mean, people my age,
yeah.
It's fascinating and so surprising to me.
Yeah, and I think it's much easier to foster pro-life attitude, yes, when there is much life around you. When you are close to large families or part of a large family, you can see that. And I think it's not a matter of just begetting life, it's a matter of being generous with life. And generous about procreating, generous about really participating with God and really following in some way a very incipient commandment, you know, is that that's to be fruitful. But to be also generous with that fruitfulness, not only just in having children, but be generous about serving them and being part of their lives.
Mm. And the great delight that we should have at the sight of a child, even if we're not crazy about children, children should bring out the delight in us.
That's a very good point. I find, too, that, you know, you could be at the supermarket and the plane in an airplane or something, and then some child is crying or whatnot, and people get upset too easily.
Right.
And we should be encouraging and supporting of a mother who shouldn't necessarily be completely embarrassed, but in some way should be supported and receive words of support. I try to do that myself when I'm in the checkout line or whatever in an airplane, because I think it's very important to support mothers who find in their own encounters with trying to control their children in public, they're oftentimes disparaged.
And I do find that I think there are many parents who don't give a darn about their children's ill behavior, but I think most parents, a lot of the time, do have this attitude of embarrassment with maybe poor behavior and screaming on their child's part, and also would like their child to just be quiet.
That's right. And I think, that's a natural desire, too.
Right.
I think you always want to think that your children are always the best children.
And a perfect example of being pro-life and not anti-abortion, so again, not putting our actions, our attitudes, our counsel toward others where we claim to stand on the pro-life issue, is actually the actress Ashley Bratcher from Unplanned. So Unplanned is a movie coming out this spring, and it tells a story of actually the book. And if you go over to my website, timory.com, I actually go chapter by chapter through the book Unplanned, which was written by Abby Johnson. Now, it was many years ago, so I haven't looked at it in a little while, but Abby Johnson left Planned Parenthood back in 2009 after even being their Planned Parenthood Employee of the Year in her region, after she witnessed an ultrasound-guided abortion as the baby was reacting and responding to those abortion instruments. And she really narrates her story, which is now being brought into movie form. And the actress who plays Abby Johnson says she grew up being pro-life, but she didn't really realize how pro-life her own testament was. She said, "I wasn't an activist, but I think now she would find herself as one because she found out that her mother was actually on the table getting ready to abort her and chose otherwise."
Yeah, you can only imagine how shocking that is. And I've seen other people turn around because of abortion, because of things like ultrasounds or somebody they know and they've had a child that's died or somebody close to them has died, help them rethink this. But boy, it's a whole different level when you talk about or you think about one's own life being taken away. And so I would imagine that really touched her to the depths.
Absolutely. And what a miracle that she's now playing in this role, depicting someone who had a major conversion. I just really thought in this piece, I think it was on Fox, foxnews.com, where she talks about how, again, she was pro-life, but she was not an activist. So what she's saying here is that she wasn't pro-life enough to be convicted, compelled to speak out about this issue. And now she is. This is an incredible testament to that attitude of I'm pro-life. But I'm not willing to do anything. Is that you? Are you sitting here making excuses about the tough conversations, that extra time on a Saturday morning or a Wednesday morning when you could be at the abortion clinic praying and interceding or maybe even counseling for the lives who could be saved if you were there?
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
So good to be back with you in studio. studio, I have Dr. Philip Chavez with me. You can find his work, all his published work, at mensacademypress.com, CDs, books, including his book, Men's Spirituality Starter Manual, which is an excellent gift, maybe if it's a last-minute gift this Christmas for a loved one. Or I don't know that I'm necessarily a fan of giving books to people for Christmas if they're not necessarily readers or you know it's something they'll enjoy.
That's so, right, especially men who don't like to read at all. That's right.
So then why do you write a book?
Well, it's only 80 pages. It's a starter manual. It's, right. Yeah, so it's not too long, so it's manageable for men.
I actually have read through a lot of it, and it is a very small. It's manageable. It's turnkey. It's something maybe if you were going on an airplane ride or right. had somewhere you're going to be sitting a long while, like the DMV, who knows, that you could take it with you and maybe be inspired a little bit to read.
I hope so, yes.
But men are a little more likely to listen to podcasts or CD sets, and you have those as well there at the Men's Academy Press.
I think that's right. Yeah, in fact, they could check my site too, mensacademy.org, and for free podcasts.
Excellent. Great resources. I want to make a brief announcement. Fantastic news that has come out of some of the many very pro-life advocates working within the Trump administration. The Trump administration this past week has announced that they are looking for pro-life and pro-science alternatives to this buying and selling fetal tissue that we've seen that the government has had contracts with different organizations being involved with. So basically, they're saying, no, this is not science that respects the dignity of the human person, that respects the woman who is not even consenting necessarily to having her child experimented on. Because many of these women have no idea that that's something they're signing away when they go into the abortion clinic. So this is fantastic news, and praise God for the pro-life warriors who are working within the current administration to stand for life, liberty, right?
That's
and religion
right.
today.
Sure.
So there was a book that was published just recently. It's called The Strength of Vocation, The Consecrated Life Today. And in fact, it's a long interview with Pope Francis. And Pope Francis makes a number of comments actually having to do with people who experience same-sex attraction who are working as priests today.
Yes.
What are your thoughts there?
Well, yes, and it, priests and religious. And yeah. I think much of what the Holy Father said or what he's being interviewed about, I think his statements are very, very good. You know, that those who are not yet ordained, but who show either a propensity for or have same-sex attraction or even have an approval of it publicly, they're unfit for ministry. Mm-hmm. And as he mentions too, even ordained to the diaconate for a priestly candidate, if there is some same-sex attraction that in one sense was in the personality, that should be absent for at least 3 years before ordination. So it's good that he's saying that, yes, that those who are preparing for ministry or preparing for religious vows do not receive them if they are in this condition. But also, too, with respect to those inside the priesthood or in religious life, if they can't follow the vows or and follow celibacy, that they should actually leave. But if they can remain steadfast or at least resolute in their desire to follow their spiritual life, pursue their vows, it's legitimate for them to stay in.
He calls all religious to live celibacy with integrity. In fact, I'll expand that call. All of us are called to live chastity with integrity.
That's right.
In whatever state of life we're in. So if you're married, sexual relations is okay with your spouse only, right? Only if you're married. And, you know, that same call, that expectation of chastity, living faithfully to our vocation. And for religious life, that is a celibate chastity.
That's right. For which reason, on one level, is very difficult to live. Of course, I think it's our experience shows, and those we know too, it's very difficult to live in married life too. But in the priesthood and religious life, there's a different sort of practice of chastity by which one has to find a certain interior integrity within themselves. That when they're dealing with same-sex attraction, there's an internal discord in the personality, which makes the moral living even more difficult, but all the more so for falling in norms of chastity and celibacy, all the more so more difficult than those with a heterosexual orientation.
And I love that you're talking about this. That's Dr. Philip Chavez. I'm Timory Millington. You're listening to Trending. The way you're talking about it, you know, this is why the church talks in the catechism about, you know, you're saying that it's already hard for a priest to live celibately, to live chastely, but add a sexual desire that is for someone of the same sex, which the church refers to as a disordered desire,
right?
Because what happens is we actually kind of sexualize ourselves and other human beings more so. And
that's
this is part of the struggle. And so what it's saying is that your sexual orientation is not following the natural course of the way the body was created.
That's right.
And you're deviating from that in your desire and your lusting and your way of thinking. And that's going to make it even harder. You're going to be on really rocky ground to live out that celibate chaste lifestyle.
That's right.
And so what the Holy Father is talking about, he actually ends up talking about scandal, in fact. And he ends up talking about how for those who are maybe living what's called a double life, that it would be better for them to leave the religious life than to create that scandal for others, and even to cause that level of activity in themselves that is so disjointed, that's harmful for them as well.
That's right. And it's almost a shame in some way that the Holy Father even has to mention such a thing, because it's almost stating the obvious, right? You shouldn't be leading a double life. I would imagine, though, for those priests that may be doing that, they're not living in reality, so maybe they may not see the incongruity of their lives on one level, or at least on a level of internal need, or they may be so broken in themselves they may find it hard to reckon with that reality, and maybe even have the courage to leave if they are caught up in that. I would imagine that living the priestly state becomes so comfortable and so congruous with much of the lifestyle, that's probably very hard to leave as well.
I'm so appreciative that the Holy Father has spoken up about this, that in fact he's approved the book and its publication, because we don't see a lot of very clear statements sometimes like this that are actually approved by the Vatican, that he is aware of having been published in his name. Now, this is important too, because I want to just point very briefly, and we've been talking about it on the show, and you need to remember this, because mainstream media is not covering this, and that's the fact that 80% of the victims of sexual abuse today have been young boys.
That's right.
Clergy sex abuse. So what we're talking about, and they haven't just been boys pre-puberty, but they're boys who are going through puberty. So what we're seeing is that it's homosexual activity. Same thing with the abusers who have been abusing very, very young and easily influenced young men in the seminary. And so this is important. This was a good comparison that I saw, Dr. Chavez, this week. And it was that 80% of all lung cancer deaths are actually connected to smoking. And so if we were to speak out against smoking, would that make us anti-smokers, bigots, etc.? No, we're just stating a fact. Well, the reality is that 80% of victims of clerical sex abuse have been abused by a priest, and they are young boys. So we're just pointing out the fact that same-sex attraction and sexual abuse in the church are very closely connected.
That's right. It's not a matter of hating anyone or disparage any particular person, but it is about pointing out that, yes, this propensity, the same-sex attraction, is very, very difficult to control, for which reason, we just see a disproportionate amount of homosexual activity among clergy as opposed to any kind of heterosexual abuse.
I want to come more into this topic now, because we're seeing this kind of crosses over with what's happening with the Boy Scouts, in fact. So as the church is dealing with its sexual abuse scandal, so are the Boy Scouts of America. But the politically correct way to refer to it is what it's Scouts BSA.
Yes.
Scouts BSA. Tell us what's happening there.
Well, I think it went through a slow progression since after 2010, I think it was 2012, 2013, those boys who had a same-sex attraction were allowed to enter. And then it happened that later on, those men who are scout leaders could be permitted to be leaders if they even had a same-sex attraction. Another issue, too, was introducing girls into Scouts BSA. So aside from other internal difficulties for which they're facing a lot of lawsuits, they're finding their donations are tanking. And so that's affecting them right in the pocketbook. Now, from what I understand, Scouts BSA still wants to do its best, even though it may be following or looking into Chapter 11. They still want to figure out what a view is for still survival.
So they're looking at bankruptcy, but part of why they're looking at bankruptcy as well is because they themselves have seen a sex abuse taking place among their members.
That's right.
In fact, here are the numbers for legal fees that they have been cranking out the last couple of years. I mean, it is just atrocious. Legal fees, just in 2015, $7.6 million. In 2016, $3.5 million. And we're just looking at the money put out for legal fees, because we're seeing that as they have allowed for more people with same-sex attraction to work with with young boys, they've seen an increase in sexual abuse, and this may lead them to bankruptcy.
That's right. And there's such a blindness there for them to still continue with this ideology that the Scouts must be all-inclusive, either for those with of all gender identity and for girls as well. So, but in any case, yeah, they're running into real problems here, and they're running into really or they're operating in somewhat of a contradiction of their original mission, which mm-hmm. was for boys only, we'll say heterosexual boys, to form them well to be men.
It's so heartbreaking to see that we've had yet another organization that is meant to be for the fostering and development of the human person, specifically young men, is just completely been thrashed. I mean, young men today can't even watch a television show or a movie without specifically the fathers, but even the teenage boys now looking like the buffoons.
That's right. That's right. And also, too, let's remember, too, Timmery, in the original founding of the Scouts, definitely through influence, not only in this country, but especially in England under Robert Baden Powell, he visioned the Scouts as a way of men, young men, living out Christian identity. The Scouts was a form that he thought, in all the formation that he gave, was a way out, a way of living the Christian life.
Actually, a comment on that's really interesting. So I actually have two dear friends who are priests, older priests who came from France, and incredible, incredible priests. Both of them attribute their vocation to the Boy Scouts there in France.
And, I would imagine that, yeah.
And it's just amazing to see how influential the Boy Scouts has been in many areas for the spiritual, moral development of the human person. Yet we've watered down what truth is today, that we're not seeing that development taking place today with our young men.
Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Maybe you were a Boy Scout, or maybe you're currently raising children and you've intentionally not put your sons into Scouts BSA. There's a reason, given where the Boy Scouts have been going with what they've allowed to take place. Same thing with the Girl Scouts. Much could be said there as well. But in studio with me is Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy. Now, I would love to hear your thoughts. So we've been talking, if you did not catch earlier episode, you can find it at radiotrending.com, or the last segment where we were talking about what's happening with the bankruptcy of the Scouts and really the moral degeneration, essentially, of their work.
Sure.
But what I'd like to offer as a solution, and if you're familiar with it, or even just give me your thoughts, is the Troops of St. George. Now, this is actually quickly growing across the country. I know at least here in Southern California, we have, I think, one troop in, I think, Orange County. But what the Troops of St. George, they were founded by Dr. Taylor Marshall. Huge recommendation for his work. Fantastic, fantastic work, what he's doing really with educating and the new St. Thomas Institute on theology and morality. But here's what's neat about the Troops of St. George. It does have a very deep spiritual element, but it actually requires that all of the fathers be involved with every troop meeting, every activity the boys are involved in.
Yeah, that's vital, Timmery. That's really vital because the boys, as much as they need activity within themselves, remember, if they're being in the Boy Scouts and being led, it's most proper, first of all, that they be led by their fathers. You know, most boys, when they're getting formed, yes, they need to work together in a fraternity, but their fathers really need to be present. And the Boy Scouts shouldn't be an enterprise by which a man can think, okay, great, there's this program I could send my son to and they can form him, or they can make him a better man, or they can make him a good Christian boy. So yes, it's vital that the fathers be involved.
I love that. So those who are interested, it's thetroopsofstgeorge.org. Now, maybe there isn't a troop in your area. Well, it already requires father participation, so why don't you be the leader and bring that to your area? Start it at your church. I mean, there's so much that can be done, and I think that even men, fathers are hungry for that masculine activity with their sons.
That's right, and this gives them a forum to do that, so they don't have to reinvent anything or reinvent anything. I've read in the past, I think it was a couple months ago, I did read about the Troops of St. George, and I think fathers would actually enjoy it. I mean, there is vigorous outdoor activity. Yeah. There's good training in the faith, which most fathers need as well. And most fathers, like I say, do need the vigorous activity. Most fathers do need a forum by which they could spend some positive quality time with their son.
And they have the opportunity to spend time with men of their own age, because
That's
as
right.
we know today, men actually don't have a lot of friends. It's a major crisis for men today. They lack friendship. Most men, you know, have maybe some colleagues at work, but they don't really have deep friendships. And men specifically need other men to hold them accountable, call them into their home, call them into their mission. And when they're failing, or maybe their other friends notice something, they can challenge them to do more.
Yeah. And I think, for example, the Troops of St. George, what's nice about that is, you know, most as I understand from my experience in my own relatives, most men who are parents generally find their friends with the parents of the siblings, or parents of those who are friends of their own children.
Yeah.
And so fathers who would otherwise find a forum for manhood can find it naturally here of boys or men and boys participating in programs that they do too, where they can find other male friends who are engaged in the same kind of project. Because men bond when they do things, Timory. So to be engaged in that kind of thing to form their boys would be heavily bonding for fathers.
I think the Troops of St. George is a huge answer to prayer and crisis, maybe within your own family. So I've tweeted out the links. You can find them at Timory on Twitter and Facebook. Again, that's troopsofstgeorge.org. Now, speaking of being called into your mission and that we can do more, you're listening to Trending with Timory. Dr. Philip Chavez is here. We are in our final days of Advent. And I really love what I'm hearing coming out in terms of the sacrifices, the deeper call to prayer and fasting from the church in response to the sex abuse scandal.
Yes.
And one of the things that I have seen come out of this is the calling for us to return to the Ember Days, which in the past, some of you may have remembered me mentioning them back, I think in September or August, but it's four times a year, right around the change of the season.
That's right.
Where we have 3 days, a Wednesday, a Friday, and Saturday. Now,
yes.
Wednesdays and Fridays are actually already normally supposed to be kind of penitential days during our week. But this includes Saturdays as well as a penitential day, essentially. And the Ember Days are really an opportunity to recognize the changing of the seasons, the giving up of the harvest that we would be receiving, specifically for this set of Ember Days, which would be the 19th, 21st, and 22nd of December.
That's right.
Right before Christmas. It would actually symbolize the labor and the first fruits and giving up specifically of olives, which are part of what to bring about, for example, the oils for baptism and anointing of the sick.
Interesting.
Really neat opportunity. But we are being called by some of the bishops and some of the different dioceses, not specifically mine, but in Pittsburgh, for example, they're calling really everyone to participate in the Ember Days of prayer, fasting, and actually a daily holy hour for priests for the sex abuse scandal and for priests to do
exactly
this in repentance for what's been happening.
Yeah, this is all very important, Timory, because one of the aspects of living the baptismal vocation of the priest, prophet, and king, the priest being the one who sacrifices, the prophet, the one who learns the truth and teaches, and the king who uses his gifts for the kingdom of God. One of the more difficult of those three is to actually be sacrificial for the sake of others. Now, certainly anything we offer for others is a good thing. However, to offer certain sacrifices and to follow through and to be disciplined that in the Christian life is a vital part. Now, interestingly, all the more so for priests, because one of the things that really sets the priests of the New Covenant apart really from not just the New Testament priesthood, but any priesthood that's ever existed in any culture, is that a priest just doesn't simply offer sacrifice. A priest is the sacrifice. Mm. So in the orientation in the Roman Catholic priesthood should be one of the priest, his primal, there's a certain primacy even before exercising the sacraments. There's a certain primacy of him offering himself up as a victim, offering himself up as a sacrifice. Because again, generically, that separates him from all other priesthoods. Mm-hmm. And so for them to foster that spirit of sacrifice and to move in sacrifice and to be an example of that, I think is vital in the church. And again, all the more so in light of the reparation that needs to be done in light of current happenings and some of the unfortunate things we've been seeing in the church.
That's Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy. Dr. Chavez, as you're talking about this, people may not know that the Ember Days actually occurring four times a year, right around the change of the season, we're meant to offer up gratitude for what we have, for the
That's
work
right.
that we've done. We're meant to fast or abstain of specifically meat, or maybe even completely fasting from all food. In fact, the fasting guidelines have really decreased over the last 50, 60 years.
They have, very much so.
And some of which is the Ember Days used to be in the liturgical calendar. calendar.
That's right.
And they aren't anymore. And I'm really hoping that in some of these bishops calling us to do more, that it'll be put back on the church calendar, which would be pretty cool. Who knows? But even if it's not on the liturgical calendar, do we really have to wait for Good Friday to fast?
That's right. I mean, that really is just something we should be doing on a regular level. And again, I think it's just vital that as Christians, we just learn to dispose ourselves and learn to offer ourselves in the image of Jesus Christ, the high priest, to be a sacrifice for others. And so that it's not just something we do on occasion, but it's a mode and a spirit by which we live our lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone should see themselves as moving in the journey of the Christ who himself sacrificed for all. And for us to participate in that sacrifice, ultimately his sacrifice, is how we should really posture ourselves all the time.
It's really interesting because, you know, intermittent fasting has become very popular today. And we're finding that there are so many health benefits, medical benefits to fasting. I mean, I could go on. I don't have a lot of time here to do that. But the benefits for your health, for your self-control, though, as well on a spiritual level, are so important. And if you look at all the major religions, historically, they've always had some form of fasting.
That's right.
Yet today, the requirements for fasting have been so diminished. I mean, it's really like just don't snack between meals, and that counts as fasting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if the church did in some way encourage some more legislation of it, I think that would be helpful. But again, Timur, I think what happened in the past, I think one of the reasons the church backed off is because some people saw it as just being too ritualistic, or they followed only in light of it being a ritual. And again, I think more vital than teaching the specifics of fasting is to teach it, that more the spirit of fasting, and that it is something that we're called to just to in our journey just to image Christ.
Very interesting points, and something we're actually going to pick up on the next episode of Trending. So be sure to head over to radiotrending.com so you can catch this episode, because we're going to be talking about how, in fact, do you know what age young people actually checking out of the Catholic Church? It's much younger than you think. So be sure to listen to that episode, because we're going to talk about where are we seeing more people, in fact, coming into the church. And part of it has to do where more expectations are being placed on them. On the churches where we see higher expectations, we see more people showing up. In fact, I was just listening to a homily this weekend by my parish priest, and he was talking about joy and how all the different saints lived out joy. But specifically, he started to talk about how one young man searching for a new religion, trying to figure out where he wanted to be, loved Catholicism because what it expected of him.
Interesting.
He had never known a church that actually expected him to do something.
That's right. Men especially, they love to rise up to a challenge. They're not going to be interested in much that doesn't challenge them. Mm. At least definitely not in the long run.
Dr. Philip Chavez, where can people find you and your work from the Men's Academy?
Well, they can find out what I'm doing on themensacademy.org.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us. It's been a great hour.
It's been my pleasure.
Loved having you on regularly. So if anyone would like to hear more episodes or maybe replay or share this episode today with Dr. Philip Chavez, you not only can catch it on the radio across the country, but you can find it online at radiotrending.com. I'm Timory Millington. As we head into Christmas season, know of my prayers for you, and you can catch again any episodes online. We'll take a brief hiatus for that Christmas time, but you can tweet me at Timory on Twitter, on Instagram, and Facebook. And if you enjoyed the show today, you can send me a message over at radiotrending.com/contact.
This has been Trending with Timory. To learn more about Timory Millington, visit timory.com.